Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Here to talk about cancer, everyone's favorite topic.
I haven't talked about it enough this year.
I know.
Not at all relevant.
Sort of new to me. I'm like, ooh, a fresh story. Like,
wait, what is treatment? Like, what is this?
Cancer. Wait, she lost cancer, her hair? Cancer. What?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Interesting. Yeah.
We are here to talk this week about the internet's favorite movie, We Live in Time. Or, I don't know if it's the internet's favorite movie, but currently starring two of the internet's favorite people, at the very least. The press cycle rollout for this has been nothing short of extraordinary. With Andrew Garfield going on Sesame Street, with him going on Chicken Shop Date and having between him and Billie Eilish this year on Chicken Shop Date, it's like, Amanda de Meldenberg is
Amelia.
Amelia. I love her.
Amelia. I know. Okay. So I've seen like her red carpet, whatever. I've watched a few clips of Chicken Shop. I don't love shticks, right? Like, I don't love a persona with an interviewer. It's never been my thing. Like Zach Galifianakis, like I've never liked it. But I like Andrew Garfield with her because she can't like stay in character around him because he's just so like earnest, or there's just such a palpable chemistry. And I don't want to be a sucker for just good acting, but I feel like they have good chemistry. Like whether that means they'll end up married or not is a totally different thing, but they have very palpable chemistry.
Yeah, no, it is working. There is something going on.
Do you agree? Yeah.
I do agree.
Oh, it was mesmerizing. That was the first episode of Chicken Shop Date I've ever watched. And most of the time I was like, what is going on? But then it's just like, it was mesmerizing. And if he was acting, he deserves an Oscar finally, because that was just like, that's like hotter than, you know, like Notebook chemistry, you know, like that was, it was such a delight.
I've watched a bunch of episodes of this because I do really like her. And I think that her show is funny. And I like that she's just sort of like flirty with everybody. But this was definitely to a level that is different than some people. And a lot of times she's on the show and you can tell the person like doesn't really know who she is or like hasn't watched it before or whatever. Yeah. And so it kind of almost gets awkward because she's doing her bits and they are kind of like, what is going on? Like, why is this woman trying to like seduce me? But I think when you have somebody who like knows what they're doing and knows what's going on and is like willing to go back and forth with her, it's very fun. And well, because then they also had a clip of the two of them on a red carpet, like I don't know when, like way before this.
I saw it.
It's also super fun and cute. I'm just like,
oh my god, I know. Andrew Garfield, like I try not to like I judge celebrities on a different level. I think most of them are bad just by way of how they got there and how disconnected they are from reality. But I will say that he has sort of maintained his internet boyfriend like label and crown for a pretty long time, like a pretty impressively long time. And I think that there is something lovely about him. If it comes out that he's a douchebag, I won't be shocked per se. But I would be disappointed in a new and distinct way.
Because
I'm rooting for him. I really am. Ever since the Emma Stone era, she's like a shot of espresso era. I mean, he was just dating a normie. I mean, non-celebrity. And so I'm just like, I like him. Okay. I can't help it.
No, I also really like him. And I think the fact that he dated Emma Stone, like, one, proves that he has, I think, good taste, because she seems like also a really lovely person in general from all of the videos and stuff I've seen with her, but also just like interactions that like events I've been at that she's also been at, or things I've heard from other people who have interviewed her and stuff. And also I feel like Emma Stone and Chicken Shop Date sort of have similar vibes in some ways. So it would make sense that they would get along together. You know what I mean? Because I feel like they're both like very funny and sort of
and sarcastic.
Yeah.
A little and abrasive. Then,
yeah, no, it's a charm offensive. Okay, Andrew Garfield's on it. Then Florence Pugh, I think, is filming something right now, so hasn't done quite as much promo, but she's also great in a press cycle. So really the two of them together are
Babes. Incredible. No, I don't think it was in it, Babes. Yeah. Oh, baby. I love that. Oh, they were very charming and they're very beautiful. And it's a very easy premise to buy into watching them fall in love.
And it's fun that they both get to be British finally in a movie.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Like, because both of them, neither of them are doing accents. So that's fun.
Mm. Yeah. So cute. So cute. I mean, so I've been hyped for this movie in a general sense. Like, it's not necessarily been counting down the days, but it's been on my radar. I mean, I think most people have dialed in because there were like shots of him wearing glasses on set once, and that was enough to make the internet go wild. And there's, of course, the viral like Ferris or merry-go-round horse that was also in a promo photo. And so that's been milked for a lot of content too. So it's been like around on the radar. And I knew it was a cancer movie, right? Like, it doesn't hide it. It tells you what it is. But it's still really, really hard to watch. I was like crying from minute five in. So yeah, it's fine. It was good.
I'm trying to remember if we like talked about this movie at all, like in our preview or anything. I feel like it sort of came up.
I think so. Because I don't think it had been a date had been given yet when we did our preview.
The thing is, it's an A24 movie. So it's not a massive studio film. It's from John Crowley, who did Brooklyn, also did The Goldfinch. The Goldfinch, an incredible movie that we all love.
Are you sure? I feel like, no.
Yeah. Yes.
That's highlighted in his wiki bio.
The Goldfinch. Yeah, no, that's not that's not in the introduction of his bio, unfortunately. I'm going to go in and add that later. But it's like, it's a rom-com that is a romance that's not based on a novel either, which I was sort of surprised. Like, having watched this, I thought, oh, this is definitely based on a book, but it's not. This guy Nick Payne wrote it, and he, I guess, is like he's a playwright, so he's written a lot of plays. Nothing that seen, but interesting.
I feel like I'm usually good at being able to tell when a woman writes something versus a man. Uh-huh. And so when the credits rolled and it was like directed by and written by two dudes, I was like, wait, what? No, unbelievable. This cannot be true. But they got me. So congrats to those men. It's pretty hard to not be a distracting force in a movie like this. But they really, because I looked up the writer because it really rattled me. I really was shocked. Not because it's female centric in the fact that one of the characters is a woman and she's going through the cancer and she's dealing with like figuring out what her life will mean. So there are a lot of moments around motherhood and wifedom and meaning and purpose. So like maybe that was like ringing true to me in a way that I was like, oh, a woman had to have written this. But I guess that's my own bias, you know, showing. And I'm happy that there's a man out there who can surprise me still. So
it's interesting. Yeah. Because I'm looking at his filmography, like aside from all of his plays, he also wrote a Netflix movie called The Last Letter from Your Lover that I guess is based on a JoJo Moyes novel and stars Joe Alwyn, Felicity Jones, Shailene Woodley. Okay, so you've never seen that. I've never seen it either, but it only has like a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's not great. And then also some mystery drama thing called The Sense of an Ending from 2017 that's also based on a novel that I've also never heard of. This 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, but interesting.
I know. I was trying to find out if he had some sort of cancer story in his life, like if this was written based, because usually they like talk about like, oh, this was close to me, but it just seems like he had an idea and he just decided to destroy us emotionally, and I respect him for it. I do.
Yeah, no,
it reminded me of like About Time, like similar energy to sort of this random movie that just shouldn't really work. Like, what do you mean it's a non-linear romance that ends with cancer and like a dead mom? Like, you know, like it's like this should feel exploitative, it should feel schlocky, it should feel overdone, but however they managed it together, like it really turned out to be a really thoughtful and original movie to sit with, at least for me.
I really loved this as well. Do think that it is, I hope that it does really well in theaters. I feel like coming out of the festivals and stuff, like it got good reviews, but I don't think it got the respect that it deserves, because it is a genre that, you know, obviously film bros are not going to gravitate towards. Yeah. It feels like it might be written by a woman, you know, that's a first strike against it. And it's just a genre, like these sort of weepy romances aren't necessarily something that everybody gravitates to right away. I went and saw it mainly in Toronto because I really like Florence Pugh, and I wrote an article at BuzzFeed that was like ranking all of her movies. So I was like, okay, I'm duty bound to go see this. I think a decent number of people saw it, but it wasn't necessarily like a massive movie sort of coming out of the festival, or it didn't you know, get the crazy reviews that some other things did. But I think that so much of this works well because the two actors are so good. Like every scene, like they're incredible at sort of doing anything. They have great chemistry, they're very funny, but they are also very good at delivering the dramatic parts. Like you can just tell that this works so much better than it would with anybody else because these two actors are so flawless in it. So I think a lot of the credit does go to them, but also I've been thinking about this movie a lot because also this at the same festival, or you know, coming out in these festivals, was this movie called The Room Next Door, which is a Tilda Swinton, Julianne Moore cancer drama. And that's sort of like Tilda Swinton is dying of cancer and like sort of takes Julianne Moore to this house that's like upstate New York, and Tilda Swinton has like a suicide pill with her, and she's like, okay, we're just gonna like sort of hang out in this house for a couple of months, and then at some point one of these days you're gonna wake up and I'm gonna be in the room next door, but I'm gonna be dead, and sort of, you know, navigating situation. And one, that movie is very stilted and weird in a way that I don't think really works for it. But also it's like, I think with these cancer movies, we're so used to the structure of like, oh, we get to see them like young and happy and nice for like the first half. And then the second half is just this really terrible long slog of just like the person getting sicker and dying and, you know, misery until you get to this like very, very depressing end. And I think the smart thing that We Live in Time does is because it chops up the timeline, it's like you get sort of small doses of the sad parts, but it's within lots of parts that are really funny and really interesting, or, you know, just things that have nothing to do with cancer at all. And I think as, you know, like, as somebody who had/has cancer, I think that you don't want to sort of have, like, you don't want to think about your life as like, oh, I had this good section and then I had this terrible section at the end, and that's what people are going to think, remember me by, or that's what people are going to think of, or that's sort of like erasing these other moments. So I think to intercut them works really well, because then you get you know, a more sense of like the fuller version mm-hmm. of their relationship and of the character that Florence yeah. Pugh is playing without it being sort of so sad and depressing at the end.
Yeah, no, I agree. It surprised me because it starts basically with the cancer re-diagnosis. And yeah, Rob especially was surprised because he's like, wait, I thought this was a meet cute. I thought she hits him with a car. What's happening? And I liked that. I liked the surprise twist of like stumbling through this life and seeing the good and the bad and the ugly and getting to appreciate the character through all the moments instead of like, I think, you know, cancer movies can feel, you know, like romanticized feels like the wrong word, but there's like this real look at how they suffer. And isn't that the meaning of life right there? Like how much life wants to continue, like so much to live for. What a tragedy. And you have, you know, The Fault in Our Stars and A Walk to Remember and all these people learning lessons about like what can come from death. And I like that this was way less concerned with that. Like it was less concerned with the mom giving like one last letter of advice to her daughter who would struggle to remember her. It was less like, oh, the husband must learn to love this frail body as the hairs falling out dramatically at a dinner scene. Like, it didn't step into these tropes, and so it allowed it to feel more authentic in a way where you were just kind of stuck feeling the good and the bad and the sad with them as it happened, and the whiplash kind of allowed you to, I don't know, believe in the story more instead of just waiting for the next shoe to drop, and that in turn made the shoe dropping that much more emotionally wrecking. And yeah, I think it just kind of perfectly, like, that's why. Oh my god,
oh my gosh,
scared me so bad. Okay, sorry, package delivery. Continuing on, I really liked it.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to even sort of, well, it's hard to talk about one because it's like the timeline is so non-linear. So it's like we could sort of talk about, yeah, I guess, the plot like in a like chronological order, but that's not really how the movie works. And I can't remember like the order of the scenes because it's just sort of a jumble of things. But yeah, I also, I guess, to sort of talk about the ending or whatever, like, you never see her die. It's, like, implied that she has at the end. There's, like, a final scene. But it's not confirmed. And I think that there's just, like, a level of depressingness and, like, trauma porn, kind of, that we don't have in this movie. And I think that that is very welcome. Like, especially for me as somebody like going through this, like, I don't necessarily want to watch some like very super sad thing and be like, oh shoot, is this going to be like me? Yeah. But I also think if you were somebody on the other side of things where it's like you'd had a loved one who died from cancer, you like wouldn't necessarily be wanting to watch those movies, where I feel like this is very like life affirming and it really is saying like, okay, people die of cancer. Like, that is going to happen. That is part of life. And that is really sad. But also, there's all of these other things that this person has done. And their life is, you know, a totality of things. And cancer is just, like, one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's all-encompassing. And I think that that was, a really, like, I think the form sort of matched the function really well in how that was presented.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm a sucker, right? Like, I cried during 5 Feet Apart, like nobody's business, even though that's a terrible movie. It's a terrible movie, and it's so manipulative, and it's so cheesy, and it's so dumb. And, like, same goes for almost every cancer movie out there. You can get me to cry. You know, give me a sad speech as someone died. Like, my Sister to the Traveling Pants, oh my gosh, when she's on the blanket telling her that she's going to die, yeah, I'm weeping. I'm weeping so hard. But there's something different, like, when you feel like you're just like it's bittersweet, right? Like, and that's how most pain is that it's just like bittersweet. And so you are watching a lovely moment between a family and you're mourning that that's like the last one we get to see with them or whatever. But on top of that, you're really celebrating like who this person, like what this person was about and kind of what she was able to get and give and how that, yeah, added to this person as a whole rather than just being a cancer patient, rather than just being a cancer victim. Like it was really charming in how it leaned into these like most simple moments where it's sort of bookmarked by this teaching of how to crack an egg. And it's like, yeah, on paper, like, oh, Andrew Garfield copies scene in how Florence Pugh taught him how to crack an egg with his child. And you're already weeping because Florence Pugh is dead now. So zoom in slowly. Like, it's like on paper, you can see how that could feel manipulative. But after the course of a film, where it is about these little moments, you're like taken in by another little moment that feels like a bigger moment, and you're just left in the theater weeping and like convulsing. And also the daughter had the same stuffy as your child, so you're just like, oh my god, am I gonna have cancer? I'm gonna die and my daughter will never know me.
No, you can't die, Shelby. There's only room on this podcast for one person to have cancer. You can't be just stealing my bit.
It's just like, yeah, exactly. It's just so like, just, oh my god.
You know, stay in your lane and pick your own disease.
I'm sure something will get me in the end. It was surprisingly funny too, which I think speaks to your point that it's like, yeah, life sucks, but it also doesn't. And I like that they had fun with that.
I think one thing that I know we've talked about before on the podcast is like, I think specificity is what really makes these kinds of movies pop. Like if you think about Notting Hill or My Best Friend's Wedding or something like that, it's like all of the supporting characters feel like specific, like there's nothing sort of like vague or general about it. It feels like very in the real world where people have these weird quirks and weird things that don't necessarily go together. And that is where you get the humor from. And this movie is just such a good example of that with the fact that she's a chef and, you know, these like different restaurants that she's working at. She was a figure skater, that like she hits him with the car, like the fact that he has this lame job for something called Weetabix, which I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Some sort of cereal,
never had Weetabix
in England. But
you never had that when you went to London? You never had a Weetabix?
No.
Oh my god.
Have you? Is Weetabix, it good?
It's terrible. It's so, so dry, so flavorless, but it's Weetabix.
I'm looking it up now. Weetabix. It's like a block.
Yeah, it's a Weetabix. It's like a cracker. Yeah, you just break it up. It's like a shredded
cereal.
Yeah, it's a shredded wheat brick.
Pictures of it in milk. So it's just like,
yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, instead of like
build your own shredded wheat
flakes, it's like a giant block of frosted flake, and you have to like chip it. And then I'm seeing a picture of somebody of eating it with like beans on it. That looks terrible.
That has to be a meme. That has to be a fake. That's
no,
ridiculous.
I think it's in their adding. I think it's in their ad, okay, like with like English breakfast beans or whatever. And then there's people who are eating them with yogurt and with chia.
It's a Weetabix. Yeah, yeah. It's just a little Weetabix.
Okay.
No, I liked their kind of quirkiness without feeling like I'm a restaurateur. Like it's like, you know, it mattered to them in ways. And I think him having this job that didn't really matter to him mattered in ways that felt relatable to me as someone who has a job I don't really care about. And yet they're still able to make this like beautiful life for themselves. I did have questions about how she opened her own restaurant at like age 25, but that's fine. Okay. We can enjoy a movie with a little escapism twirled in there as they live on their gorgeous little house farm in the countryside, gathering eggs from their chicken coop. Oh, I wish that was my life, but I got to escape into it for a little bit.
I mean, you can also probably move to the countryside with a chicken coop at some point.
Yeah, we'll see.
It doesn't feel like it's that that unattainable of a goal to have chickens in the countryside.
I'm surprised.
You don't want to move.
I don't want to live in the U.S. countryside. You know what I mean? Oh, like, there's a different crowd. Gotcha. There's a different crowd in that countryside.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No.
And it's a little further. You have to go further. You know, like I feel like you can still get to London from the countryside.
To Vermont. Easily. I feel like that's pretty liberal. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I have options.
But I guess
you're right.
Snowy, and you don't do well in the cold. Yeah. So there's also that. Exactly. Yeah. What we're learning is you're picky.
I am very picky. I have known this.
Because she's a chef, and and yeah, she's, you know, opening restaurants or whatever. He visits her at her restaurant at one point. I think that being a chef is such a good job for one of these types of movies, because it, on one hand, does feel very attainable and regular, but also is interesting. It's like an interesting job, but not something that's like a Hallmark movie where they're like, I'm a Christmas light designer or whatever. It's like, okay, that's not a real job. Yeah. Like, chef, lots of people are. And it's sort of like an art field without it necessarily being an arts field, which I think is also leads to a fun sort of element, because she decides that she wants to compete in this cooking competition called the Bacchus d'Or, which I have also never heard of before. But so that sort of becomes like the thing that she decides that she wants to do. Like, if she's going to die of cancer, like, the thing that she wants to do is compete in this competition, this like cooking competition, and give it her all. And I think that that is also such like a fun, specific, unique element and something to work towards that works really well visually on screen, because you get to see all of these beautiful dishes that she's making, but then also is not like, it's not like, oh, I want to make partner before I get cancer. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it feels,
it doesn't feel soulless.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It feels like artistic, but it's also not like, oh, she's going to paint or something. I don't know. There's a,
yeah,
like it, it's a very balance. Yes, like, well selected job, I think, for her and for sort of the arc of the movie, and it provides a lot of like interesting things.
Yeah, no, it was really nice. And I think, you know, having this ultimate fight be about her withholding that from him, and him being like, why on earth does this freaking matter to you right now? And she's like, because I want something. Like, I don't know. It was just so like tender, because so many movies like Stepmom or whatever, like there's all these movies that really focus on, well, you just want time with your family. Like, that's all you really want. And that's true, but it also isn't the only thing, right? Like, so I like that she had this one last thing she wanted to do for herself, really, but then ultimately invited her family into that and was able to really share the full portrait of herself before leaving this world. And I thought that was a really nice detail too, because it wasn't just that she was a mother and realized that was enough. It was that she wanted to show her daughter that there was more than that, you know? And I think that worked well without it feeling overly, I don't know, forced or rehearsed of like, no, she wouldn't actually care about this. Like, she would just want to spend time with her daughter. She wouldn't leave her standing in the rain. Oh my God, that scene just like killed me. Talk about exploitative. The idea of this like daycare matron making the child wait in the rain.
Oh,
while her parents ran late. Brutal. But anyways, I liked that it was, you know, it was a messy choice she made, but it was ultimately honoring herself, and then her husband was able to honor that as well. And I think watching him throw away the wedding invites was also really moving, because he had to mourn something he wanted, but ultimately what he wanted was to support her, and so that was enough for him. And I think that, yeah, I think relationships are messy, and I think especially in a high stress situation like that, of course it's going to be messy. And I like that instead of being like, oh, I just, I, you know, like instead of being schlocky, like so many cancer movies are, it allowed them both to be angry and imperfect and ultimately come together still.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like what she wanted to do, yes, was for her. But I do think it ultimately was also for the daughter as well, because it's like,
yeah,
you don't want, if this daughter's only going to have a couple of memories of you, you don't want them to all just be like you being sick. Like,
yeah.
You want them to have some sort for of sure. other quality to them. We also need to discuss the scene where she gives birth in the gas station bathroom, which was so funny. That was
very funny.
Such a delightful scene. And
yeah.
And some could say a little too, you know, movie-ish, but no, I was there for it every second of it. I thought it was so funny. And that, I think, is where their charisma comes in, because, like, they really could sell that scene and have it somehow feel realistic and funny, even though it's so outlandish.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it was like, it's over the top, but it wasn't like, you know, knocked up or something. Like, it was still realistic, and like, you have these, you know, dorky little petrol station workers who don't exactly know what they're doing, and then you have Andrew Garfield freaking out and being like, wait, do I push it back in? And they're like, no, of course not. And it all worked very beautifully. It was very funny. There was a lot of funny moments in this film. Like, it was like, it was very funny and clever. And
I don't know what like the minute by minute breakdown is, but I feel like the movie spends more of its time being funny than it does being sad. Like, I feel like there's not that
more
many
like romantic.
There's more like non-cancer than cancer. And it's also only 108 minutes long. So it does sort of like, I think it's well paced the whole time, and it doesn't feel like it drags on too long, which I feel like cancer movies often do, because you get to the sad, depressing part at the end and it's like, oh my gosh, it's just going.
Dragged the
where
inevitable.
This, you'll get a scene where it's like, oh, she's finding out some bad news or whatever, or she's sick. But then you'll go back to a scene where she's, you know, where they're doing something funny. And then the whole time you're just waiting for the horse to show up, because you're like, where is the horse from the trailer? And it does sort of briefly make an appearance, but
I did see it. Yes. Andrew Garfield was right. It is in it for a moment, baby. I think there's a lot that's to love in this film. And even though you walk away sort of emotionally destroyed, it doesn't feel manipulative in ways others films do. So the comp I really came away with was About Time. Like, I think there's just an earnestness to like the beauty of life and all its messiness, and I think that played out here as well. And really, again, I just was so surprised, because I think it captured a lot of this like modern womanhood and female gaze, especially in Andrew Garfield's like soft earnestness that you don't always get in your leading man. But I think a lot about like the sort of side storyline being that at first Florence Pugh doesn't want kids, and that becomes sort of like an issue at the beginning of their relationship, because he feels so strongly for her, but he also feels strongly he wants kids. And so there's sort of this like miscommunication where he's like, I need to know what your plan is. And she's like, well, fuck you, it's my body. Like, I don't have a plan. And I think it's like, you know, messy, and you could see both sides of it. And like, Rob was like, well, she overreacted. And I was like, well, yeah, but also not. Like, it's like unfair, this pressure that people put on women. But then I like that he chose her, and then she ultimately chose a child too. Like, it wasn't like she did it for him and then came to love the kid. It was like something she wanted, and like, you could see the disappointment when it took a while to get there. And I don't know, there were just like little details throughout that I was like, this feels like a fully formed person, and it feels like someone I would want to hang out with, and like someone I can see myself in. And that added to the joy, the humor, and the heartbreak in equal measure. So, and props to the writer, honestly.
And also, like, she gets the, like, at one point she decides not to get a hysterectomy because she wants to have a kid. So it's like, she like has every out to not do that if she doesn't want to. And she like mm-hmm. actively chooses to.
I know.
Oh, it's so
and
sad.
Then to not have that be like a source of resentment between either of them with how the story progresses mm-hmm. and like, and not to have some sort of fight around like, oh, I shouldn't have done this. Like, you know, like there's no regret. There's no like, oh, if I had just cleaned this out, I would still be alive type thing. Like, it's like, they're really a respectable pair and you don't see that portrayed in media often because so often the male and female fall into stereotypes or you have sort of this like, yeah, type or trope you're playing into. And they just felt like really interesting, compelling characters that made sense together. Like they made sense as a couple, which does not often happen in rom-com scenarios.
I think that when there's two people who are like two actors who are just so lovely and they're sort of playing versions of themselves, it is kind of like, oh, well, maybe when you are married to somebody who's just that great, you can sort of work through things better than if you're married to somebody who sucks, you know? Like, I think if I
Very
was in a
true,
relationship
yeah.
with Andrew Garfield, I would also not hold mm-hmm, a lot of mm-hmm. resentment. I would be pretty exactly. down for whatever.
Yeah, like I'm famously chill in my marriage because I picked a good one. So it's just like it worked out well for me. We are the Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh of real people. So we get told that a lot, honestly.
Do you?
Yeah. After we left the theater, people were like, wait, you guys remind me
wait,
a lot
were
of
the
them.
Stars like, here you. With us?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, I would say as somebody who has spent a lot of time with the two of you, that it does feel like you're not in a sort of danger zone when you're doing that. So that is good. Oh that's nice.
Thank
you know,
you.
Like there's
Thank
some
you.
Couples where you're like, this, like, I feel uncomfortable being here right now. Seems like there's something going on that doesn't involve me, but I'm now here watching. And that's not the case, guys. So that's nice.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to brag about my partner.
Yes, you just cannot get cancer. That's the whole, that's the part of this that we're not vibing.
Can you imagine?
With.
No.
If we both had cancer, no. Then this podcast becomes The Fault in Our Stars, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. We'll be just doing a poll. That will be our shtick, though. We're too generalized, honestly, Matt. We should become the cancer podcast where we just...
Where we both have cancer and we only watch cancer movies. And then we also have to go to Anne Frank's house together.
Exactly. Yeah, of course. You would have been a huge fan of us, Anne Frank. Yeah.
So fun.
Anyways,
fun,
it's fun. A good movie and you should see it if you have the chance.
Yes, it's very good.
And it's very sad, though. So I can see why this probably, like, I don't imagine this will, I don't know. Like, maybe it'll get nominated for, like, Best Original Screenplay, but I don't see this having, like, a real chance at, like, Oscars. I don't know if that's what they're aiming for. It feels just like a nice movie.
I don't think that they are, really. I will say that, so this year's Oscar race, if we want to discuss that briefly, I think Best Actress, per usual, is pretty competitive. I feel like the Best Actor race has less going on in it. And Andrew Garfield obviously is on a charm offensive. So, I don't know. I could maybe see him getting nominated.
That's true. Because
I'm like looking at who the other people.
He has to win one now to win Amelia. So, he's very motivated.
Yeah. I mean, I guess on Gold Derby, he is not... He is currently ranked 14th, which is low because some of these other people in front of him, I feel like, are not that good or in movies that are sort of whatever. But I do think that he has the potential to sort of get up there because people do like him. And I sort of also imagine that this movie will get submitted for comedy for the Golden Globes. And I wonder if that, will also That's get true. The nominations. There, which could be fun. I don't know. I don't think it will be a big Oscar movie, but I also think if it does well in theaters and keeps chugging along, that it'll that could also help because it made what, it's made 42 or it's made $4 million currently, but it's only opened in a couple of theaters. So I think once it gets going and there's good word of mouth, hopefully it'll do better. We shall see.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Love, We Live in Time. You guys should all go watch it. It's great. What are we covering next week is really another good question. 2024 movies. It's because now we're in the area of, well, is it actually out or is it just saying that it's out and it's only out in New York? Let me scroll through this.
Well, yeah, I guess the issue is that you already talked about Anora as your love it or hate it this week. So it's like, you've got to stop doing that to give me a chance to do it for an episode.
I guess so, but I feel like usually those kind of movies, you're like, no, I don't want to see this.
That's so rude.
We should do an episode on Conclave. That comes out this week. That's what we should do. Conclave. That's what we should do next
is that
week.
A horror?
I feel like you will like Conclave. Conclave is a thriller about a bunch of cardinals in the Vatican trying to figure out who's going to be the next pope. And it definitely, I think it has, what?
You're like, this is Shelby's type of movie.
No, well, this is what I was gonna say, is that I like, is it a bunch of like white men sort of shouting at each other? Like, to a certain degree, yes, but it is like a very good thriller and has gotten nothing but good reviews as sort of like an interesting mystery kind of movie. And
interesting,
not that like it
Wait, is
feels
this based on a true story or it's just like
no,
a
Oh, okay. But it has big sort of like 90s movie energy to me. Like it has sort of like courtroom drama, like legal thriller sort of
thing.
Because here's the premise. The premise is all of these people, cardinals have to vote on a new pope, but they vote in a sequester. So like they're not allowed to have information from the outside. And right before the things get sequestered, they get information that one of the people who's in one of the cardinals was fired from being a cardinal by the previous pope right before he died. But that news hasn't gotten around to everybody. So then people have to try to figure out like, well, what did he do? He's still here. What's going on? Also, this random cardinal shows up that nobody's ever heard of before, but was supposedly added by the pope. Divas. Like, who is that? Stanley Tucci is in it. And it also is sort of like the liberal contingent of popes versus the conservative contingent of popes of like,
I see. Okay, I'm starting to see why.
Yeah.
Why you think I'd like it. I respect your decision. Okay.
It also 100% is going to get nominated for a bunch of Oscars. So we'll be talking about it a lot. And it's by the guy who directed what was the movie last? All Quiet on the Western Front, which you liked.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Okay, look at you. Solid pitch, Matt, honestly.
Yeah. And there are some, I don't think, it actually might pass the Bechdel test, because there are some nuns who are involved in a couple of different plot points, but.
Okay, that's good.
Isabella Rossellini has like one scene where she sort of is doing something.
Great.
Yeah, I feel like you'd be interested. And also just like, we'll be able to talk about sort of like the religious aspect of it, which is always a fun vibe.
Yeah.
You know,
does this end with a nail of the cross in someone's throat?
No, but I will say it ends in a way that I cannot. I would defy I'm not going to, but I'm like, you could sit here for 50 years and make guesses on what you think the ending of this movie is going to be, and I don't think you would guess it.
Jesus comes down, and it's a woman.
Jesus is a woman.
Perfect.
When I saw it at TIFF, my friend who was sitting next to me turned to me at the end and goes, "Oh, I knew that was going to happen." And I said, that's actually a lie. Like, it's physically impossible that you would have known this. And then everyone else at the festival I kept telling this story to, and they were like, yeah, there's not a chance in hell he knew this. Like, why did he even say such a thing? Like, that's a stupid thing to say.
They were just filled with the Holy Spirit.
So we can talk about that too. And the ending's a little controversial.
Okay, perfect.
Also, yeah, lots to discuss.
Look forward to it.
Okay, so there's my pitch for everyone watching Conclave. We already pitched you on watching We Live in Time. So there's your, and Anora, there's your homework for
the all the shot and chaser.
And okay, perfect. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you then. Bye.